Oxford Town in the afternoon. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, Oxford Town, and early civil rights piece from the great Bob Dylan's very first album. We're here with Edward Wyckoff Williams, not talking about his first article, I can't even count the number he's written, contributing editor at The Root, political contributor and special correspondent with Al Jazeera America, columnist, political analyst, appearing on MSNBC, ABC, CBS, Washington, and many radio shows, including this one. We're going to talk about his latest piece, We're Dreaming If We Think We've Dealt With Racism. And Edward, welcome back.
A pleasure to be with you, Mark.
How are you?
Very good, buddy. Very good.
So you wrote this piece. I really like this piece a lot. Short, to the point.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about why you felt the need to put this out here now and what you're saying.
Well, the original question I started with was, how do you solve a problem like white privilege? And I basically it came from reading a lot of the commentary from people like Ta-Nehisi Coates and Adam Serwer around the Cliven Bundy comments and those of Donald Sterling. Because it seems like in times like these, we focus so much on what I would call traditional forms of racism. So those kinds of vitriolic statements that come from old white men. And we frame racism in a sort of Jim Crow era style body politic. But the truth of the matter is that structural racism is the real problem that sort of as a society writ large, we're being confronted with, but we are not dealing with. And that's partly because there is no political will to deal with structural racism. And so I laid out the arguments for structural racism, which are obvious, right? So we have the income gap, which is racially infused. We have mass incarceration, which is basically a racist system. And we also have these political wars, right, that we see with President Obama and Eric Holder, which have latent racist behavior. But then the more important thing that I really wanted to point out is that the men in power, specifically men like Chief Justice John Roberts and Antonin Scalia and John Boehner, the head of the House, these are men in power who actually could help change the way the structural and institutional racism operates in this country. But they're the very men who have benefited from being on the other end of these disparities and therefore have no interest in making any changes and actually want to continue the status quo. And as far as we can see, with Obama in office for two more years, they've actually done a really good job of obstructing any kind of progress in these areas. Just literally by obstructing his own agenda, right? And as long as they can continue to do that, whether or not there's a Democrat or Republican in the White House, it seems that we're going to be dealing with these structural and institutional problems for not decades to come, but maybe centuries to come.
Well, a couple questions here. Let me just read this. Actually, when people heard you were coming on today, there was some activity on our Facebook page when we sent this out, and Varda Burns wrote in, having a black president has brought all the races to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Ballinger responds to that, it sure has.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's something, though, afoot. And I'm curious what you think might be going on here. And I mean that when I'm in the middle of finishing Ta-Nehisi Coates' piece in
The Case for Reparations.
Yes, an amazing piece so far. He's an amazing writer.
Well-researched,
an amazing writer. He'll be coming. We'll be interviewing him this week. And then there's other pieces. We just finished interviewing Grandin on his book, Empire of Necessity. So there's all these things coming out at one time now. So what you're writing about is true, and I think it's very real. I want to get some of the quotes in your article. But what I'm saying is also there's something afoot here where people are beginning to question and push.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
Are.
There's something.
Yes,
so
are.
There's something. There's a national conversation, I think, about to erupt. It's going to be pretty serious and intense. That's what
well,
I'm feeling.
And Mark, you've been a part of that conversation, and you've been a part of driving that. And I would say that I've seen a real shift in the sort of conversations we've been having in a post Trayvon Martin world. I think it's interesting that both Trayvon Martin and Obama happen in the same era because they're two sides of the same coin, right? And so I think that a part of what's happening is that now we're talking about our children being affected by the structural and institutional challenges that we've been facing for centuries. And I think that because we have Barack and Michelle and their beautiful girls in the White House, we can see what is possible, but we also have to deal with the fact that Trayvon is 6 feet underground, and we have to realize that that, too, is all the more prevalent in our society. And so I think that's a part of what's driving these conversations, and I think we also have an ascendance of a black political, social, and professorial academic elite. And I think Ta-Nehisi and others in this crew are a part of that. And so we're having that conversation in a way that perhaps W.E.B. Du Bois would have been having that, but only on his own. You know what I mean? There's a whole sea of us having that conversation now and pushing these kinds of narratives. And I think that that's important.
The number here is 410-319-8888. You can join us here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. I'm going to try to read this piece that came in on our Facebook page. It's relatively long, but I'm going to put it out there if I can. Or you can tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So, you know, you quote in your piece, you quote both Justice John Roberts when that famous quote in 2007, the way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
Mm-hmm. Claiming, and the premise of that was that he was claiming that whites were being discriminated against by integrating Seattle schools. That was the whole premise of that argument, that somehow it was discriminatory to integrate schools. And there is such hubris in that kind of commentary. To have lived through the Jim Crow era, because this is a man who was born in the early 50s, I believe, right? So to have seen at least the vestiges of that, and then to sit at the highest pinnacle of our judicial system and promote an ideology that somehow the races sitting alongside each other in grammar school is a racist program just shows how out of touch, as Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, that he was out of touch with reality. I think that that's a more dangerous racism than the Cliven Bundys making comments, than the Donald Sterlings holding racist ideology. Because this kind of racism at the very top actually affects our lives and our society and the way we live, and that's a far more dangerous type of racism.
So, and you also at the end of the article kind of quote Eric Holder, who spoke here at Morgan State University,
mm-hmm.
where he took on Chief Justice Roberts. It's interesting to watch Eric Holder at this moment, really in this final days, years as AG, coming out swinging harder than he has in his entire time as Obama's Attorney General.
Yeah. And you know why that is. You realize that they're in their second term. They have nothing, absolutely nothing to lose. And if anything, they can rally the base for the November elections this year and possibly, even though it's a long shot, possibly take back the House, right? Or at least hold on to the Senate, which is extremely important. And so I think that they are confronting these issues because these are things that have been at the center of their heart for a very long time, because at the end of the day, these are two black men in America who have made it, but have made it against very serious odds. And so they're deeply connected to the struggle, right? But then also, I think that there is a political end here to open eyes, to tell truth, and to rally troops.
I'll see if I have time to read this very quickly. This is Steve on our Facebook wrote in after looking at your article and talking about our conversation. He wrote, "It seems to me like this country treats the issue of racism in the same manner it treats gun control. With every mass shooting, there is a bemoaning of and grief, suppose a public outcry, but there are public really doesn't demand and stand by something to get something done. In fact, legislation has moved forward around the country to increase gun rights. With racism, the media and public becomes enraged with racist comments made by public figures like Jerry Sterling and makes token actions to chastise and punish the individuals. Yet all around the country, legislation is being passed to advance racism and take our country back, not move us forward. Even our Supreme Court takes our country back to the Jim Crow days, and the public does nothing but sit back in silence. Americans are hypocritical in reality and hide behind a false facade of concern for issues such as racism."
That is so brilliantly articulated. I would say that most Americans are there's a couple of things going on here. I was about to say that people are asleep at the wheel, but that's actually not true. I think people have become apathetic. I think particularly in light of the credit crunch and the mortgage crisis, and the fact that the Republican Party has held President Obama's presidency hostage so that he could not move on infrastructure spending, he could not move on education, he could not move on immigration reform. Essentially, you have a very tepid recovery, and you have a widening income gap, right? And so a part of what's happening is that people are tired in general, and they're literally just trying to get through the day in their own lives, survive month by month. And they oftentimes don't have time for these sort of loftier issues, I think. And I think what we saw with Occupy, and I was so hopeful about Occupy, is that there was this sort of populist uprising against the system. And that still exists. And I think that that's even articulated in what that commentator just said, is that you have people like him thinking these issues. The question is whether or not we are willing to organize and dare I say, sacrifice in order to see change. And I think that that's where the apathy comes in, is that people feel like, have they not already given enough? Or have they not already lost enough? And I also want to make a point, because I think this is really the point of institutional and structural racism that Adam Serwer wrote about in a piece for MSNBC.com, The Case for Reparations and the Lies We Tell Ourselves, which was basically his own take on what Ta-Nehisi wrote, is that contemporary black poverty is not an accident of history or simply a failure of blacks to inculcate themselves with the virtues of thrift, modesty, and diligence from their betters. It is rooted in public policy. And then he goes on to quote Ta-Nehisi quotes. And I think that not only is poverty engineered by public policy in this country for black and brown people, but also the entire mass, the mass incarceration of black and brown people is a matter of public policy and police agendas. And when you see that then reflected in income gaps and wealth gaps and housing discrimination, I think that this has gotten to a point where we're reaching a point of critical mass. And I think that's a part of what the brilliance of what you were saying, Mark, is that now these conversations are happening, and there seems to be something afoot where there actually is going to be change, partly because people are angry.
You know, there's so much more to talk about, and Edward, next week we might jump back into this. And I was thinking, as we have to go to break here, that this debate, that I do believe this debate's about to erupt in America over this next year. I can feel it happening. And I think it's almost as important to have it nationwide as it is to have it with what I call this mass of people who are the Obama coalition. The huge minority of white people in that group who voted for Obama and want to see change, but we've never that this collective dialogue about what this really means has never happened.
And let's be reminded that was it actually a substantial percentage of whites who voted for Barack Obama. At the end of the day, yes, the Republican Party still held the white vote, but I think it was upwards of 40%.
And 43.
Yeah, so that's a real see change in Democratic politics, right? So I think that that says a lot about where we're heading and how this conversation can be multicultural, multifaceted, and rainbow-colored.
Edward Wyckoff-Williams, thank you so much. Look forward to talking to you very soon.
A pleasure, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Take care, brother. So we will be connecting to his article, We're Dreaming If We Think We've Dealt With Racism, on our website at steinershow.org. We're going to break here with A Hard Rain Gonna Fall, Bob Dylan, from his Freewheeling album, the first great album he ever did, produced on this, came out this day in 1963. We can take a short break and come back, and it's time for Sound Bites and continue our conversation on food and faith between Muslims, Christians, and Jews that took place that I moderated just the other week. Stay with us.
I crawled on six crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of seven sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans.